Help News Radio 92.3's programming decisions by joining our listener advisory board. Just by joining, you'll have a chance to win a dinner for two at Jackson Steakhouse. Then, as a member of our listener advisory board, you'll have a chance to provide feedback about our current on-air hosts, news, traffic, and weather. You'll also be able to provide recommendations in order to help us improve our station. News Radio 92.3 is all about being informative, local, and dependable. So help us be the station that our neighbors want to listen to. Go to newsradio923.com and click on the listener advisory board tile and sign up.
News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us today, we have Chip Simmons, the Escambia County Sheriff. Sir, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. It's a beautiful day out. Looking forward to it today. We had already this morning, we had an incident in... Now, I thought the dispatch said Santa Barbara and Redondo area, but you said it's Frontera Circle. Is that where you see that happening this morning?
Yeah, I was reading the unusual report, and it just shots fired and on Frontera Circle.
Okay.
No one was hit. Apparently, there were shell casings outside of a residence on that particular road, but no one knows anything about anything.
So your guys show up, shots fired, you find the casings, so you know it's true, and then nobody wants to talk about anything.
Well, I mean, you know, and if it's at midnight, you know, they
may not see anything. Sure.
I don't know that I want to pass too much judgment. I'm just, we don't have anything to go on.
Okay.
I mean, we have, you know, potentially one or two cars speeding away. But at, you know, at nighttime, it's difficult to get that information.
So, weird question about that. Look, you know, in my neighborhood, a lot of people have some kind of security system, Ring doorbells or just cameras or whatever. Is that something that is very common in, you know, poorer neighborhoods, middle class, upper class? Is, I mean, because you would think, like, it's obviously the wealthier people don't have as much crime, maybe, although they're targets, but it seems very common for them. It seems like places where you'd really want them, maybe they're not in place. I mean, I just don't know. I'm curious.
Well, all I can do is say that in many instances, there are plenty of homes that have cameras.
Okay.
And we don't always get access to that video and sometimes, and no matter what neighborhood you're in, you know, you have cameras, but they're not active, or they're down for whatever reason.
The internet was out, yeah. Or people don't want to give it to you. It's, whatever the case.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's unlikely that we go to a crime of this sort and no one has video. I mean, we do get a video from a house down the street or a convenience store down the street.
Uh-huh.
But in this particular case, we weren't able to time get a video.
We also had a story from over the weekend where a teenager, a female, wound up being shot on Christine Court, right?
Yes, I don't know if it was a female.
I had understood that, but I may be wrong. My mistake.
I'm understanding it was a 14-year-old male.
Oh, okay.
He and his friends were walking down the street, and they said that a dark-colored Kia Soul pulls up, two black males in a mask, both masked, and they shoot at him, and then they strike him in the shoulder, non-life-threatening. That's the only information, that's the only description that we have of the potential suspects in this case.
And we don't know about targeting or motives or anything at this point because it's hard to identify them. Is that kind of the issue, or still working it so we can't say?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you what we know. I mean, we are still working it. Obviously, we have investigators that are trying to figure out a motive because, again, there are times, and I'm not pointing fingers at any specific incident that we're talking about, but there are many times that we believe internally that these are retaliation, or, you know, mm-hmm. we have a shooting situation at one house, and then the next night we have one at another house, much like the Frontera Circle type situation. But in this case, we're still trying to figure out why someone would want to shoot a 14-year-old kid or shooting at him. Now, that whoever it was may not have known he was 14. You know, those are all the things that we start to look at. Is it a case of mistaken identity? Is it someone, you know, was there words exchanged before then? Is it just a, you know, just a coincidence, you know,
right,
that they were hit. So it's certainly something that we're taking very serious and something that we are investigating.
You know, there was a video that just came out of, I think it was South Florida. I can't remember the city, but I had watched the video. Orange County. And what you had here was a shooting that was taking place, and there were people all around. And when the police officers, sheriff's department deputies showed up, there was somebody on the ground who had been shot, and there was a guy there who was apparently like just a civilian paramedic was doing his best to stabilize him. And so you see the officers come out. They see that, you know, they've got gloves on, okay, which I don't know whether that's all the time or it just happened because he was wounded. And their first priority is to try to help this guy. Meanwhile, they start hearing from the crowd, he's got a gun, he's got a gun. There's, I guess, the guy's brother who had come out and was trying to get to his brother who'd been shot, had a gun in his hand. And then the officers have to immediately switch from caretaker mode, save a life mode, to this guy is now a threat to us and everybody else, and they wind up shooting him because he won't get rid of the gun. And there's some controversy over the order of events, but which is fair, you know, good to ask questions and see the body camera video. To me, it was a reminder of how quickly you have to be shift gears to something else that just happened at a scene like this. How do you train for that? I mean, how do you prepare people to be able to make good judgments that quickly in those kind of circumstances?
Well, you know, that's a good point. I think that you continue to train. I know that when you're in rookie school or the police academy, they go over things. You know, the first thing that you do is you got to control the scene. You have to make sure that there's no further harm done. You know, we talk about this in active shooter situations all the time. When the entry, what did you have? Like in the NAS shooting, our deputies were there looking for the active shooter. Yes, they passed people that were injured because they had to go to the individual that was, you know, that was committing more and more crime. So you know, you're trained to deal with the threat. You're trained to deal with containing the scene, and then you immediately go towards, you know, taking care of the injured or calling for rescue and that sort of thing. But I will tell you that that never stops. That you ask how we train for that. We continuously train for those scenarios because you can't simulate those in rookie school. You can't simulate those in a classroom setting. You actually have to have experience. You have to have someone that has been through that. You have to watch video cameras, body cameras. You have to do that sort of thing. I can tell you that those scenarios were on every promotional exam that I ever took. There's always an oral interview test to every promotional exam that I was a part of, and one of the questions was, take me through this scenario. You know, they give you a scenario, then you take me through it. And it's always control the scene. You always contain the scene. And then if the bad guy left, you don't necessarily go and chase him. You can still provide first aid. So the training is continuous, and it's certainly something that happens whenever you're a sergeant or a lieutenant on a shift as well.
Simmons, I talked yesterday with Chief Deputy Shane Tucker at the Santa Rosa Sheriff's Office about the sting they did for people who were coming to Santa Rosa County to engage in sex with minors. You know, what they thought was 13 and 14 year olds, but wound up, of course, being police officers. And, you know, I asked him the question, if we know that we can put out a sting operation like this every day of the week and get more people every day of the week, and yes, it's time and resource intensive, why don't we do this until we stop getting people?
Well, I don't know that we can do that every day of the week. I mean, there are more than we would all like to admit.
Okay.
Individuals that are willing to do this. I can tell you that every time we have conducted a sting like this, and we've conducted several.
Yeah.
And we partner with the FBI's and their ICAC, Internet Crimes Against Children type crimes, and we always get some. We don't get many sometimes. I mean, if we do it a couple times, every couple months, then we'll get three or four or five. We call them travelers. I don't know if that's the real name or not. But if you look at the names and the addresses of the people that they got, you know, you could tell there's only a couple from the local area and a couple from Alabama, different places.
Right.
And I think it's just a matter of manpower. I mean, I think that if you look at, you got the ones that the travelers. And then you also have the child pornography type people. I really think that the child pornography is something that we can put a lot more manpower into. But that is, again, that is manpower intensive, and it's you know, you have to have the equipment and you have to have the time to continually do that. And a lot of times there's very little of it is local. You know, rarely do you get a child porn case where it originated locally. You know, they gather the child porn from some other location. So yeah, the answer is, could you do more if you had more people? That's true, but that's true with a number of different things.
All right, very good. I know there was a really interesting story I wanted to give you a chance to highlight of Hassan Hills, who I guess this is somebody who you actually busted back in the day at PPD when you were with the narcotics unit, and then went to prison for a long time, but got his sentence commuted by President Trump, which people hear that and they think, oh no, but this is actually a very good story, right?
Well, yeah, before I was sheriff and before I was police chief and captain, lieutenant and sergeant, I was a narcotic investigator with Pensacola Police Department, and our unit would go out there and we would arrest, you know, drug dealers. And so on our board, we had the names of our targets, and one of those names was a gentleman by the name of Hassan Hills. So we're very familiar with him. And during the time, I was part of a number of different task forces. That task force, eventually, I was not the arresting officer on the task force of Mr. Hills, but we did arrest him many times leading up to this, which unfortunately led to him, for him, led up to his, you know, his him having a history and a past, and
right.
that probably had something to do with his eventual sentence. So that task force eventually put Hassan Hills in federal prison for life. And again, through his life continues in prison, and my life continues, and I'm able to get to where I'm at now. And a couple months ago, I get a phone call. My assistant tells me, "Hey, there's a guy by the name of Hassan Hills. He says he knows you, and he wants you to call him back." And she says, "Do you have any idea who it is?" I said, "I know exactly who it is. I'm surprised he's calling me.
Right.
How is he doing this?" And I knew where he was. And so I talked to him, and I said, "Well, come on down here. Let's have a conversation," because now it's a lot of curiosity, and it's a lot of
yeah.
Let's find out what's taking place. I met with him. We had a great conversation. We laughed a little bit about old times, because there were many times that we got out, you know, and spoke to Hassan Hills and some other people that he was associating with, and there was no arrest made.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a back and forth and a conversation, and it's okay. Don't be doing this stuff. We know what you're doing. And we'll be out of here. And we knew each other by our names. You know, it's how familiar we get with some of our targets. And so, make a long story short, he comes here and he wants to make a difference now. He understands the good fortune that he has been given. He understands the wrongs that he has committed. And so he has been partnering with us. He's been at every one of our movie nights, setting up a booth, working
cool.
with people. He's giving out blankets so people can sit on.
Yeah.
He has taken some kids that he is mentoring, and he's brought them to our Blazer Academy. He has sat in, and I've had the opportunity to share the stage with Hassan, because it's kind of a unique story where I've arrested him in the past and knew of him in the past, and now we have this partnership. So I tell people, if you'd have told me, you know, 25 years ago, that I would be sharing the stage with Hassan Hills, trying to help kids, I think that I'd say you're crazy. But that's the way things worked out, and I'm very proud of where he is, and I think that his heart is in the right place, and I think that his cautionary tale can really help out.
Well, you know, you don't always get to tell very many stories of reform, of rehabilitation, and people turning their life around to become really not just not a criminal, but genuinely actively working with law enforcement to make the community better. And that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because I think that's wonderful. You got the Battle of the Badges coming up a week from Saturday. I may be involved in that. That's going to be fun. We don't have time to talk about it today. We'll talk about it next Tuesday. And
Sounds
we definitely
good.
Want people to come out and watch all of us old people hurt ourselves playing kickball, right?
We're going to spend more time stretching than playing.
Oh, yes. 100%. Sheriff Chip Simmons, the Scambia County Sheriff, as always, sir, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.